back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 1 in 10 people living in California's most productive agricultural areas is at risk of exposure to harmful levels of nitrate contamination in their drinking water. And that's according to a recent UC Davis report called Addressing Nitrate in California's Drinking Water. It's the first comprehensive scientific investigation of nitrate contamination in the Tulare Lake Basin, which includes Fresno and Bakersfield, and the Salinas Valley, which includes Salinas and areas near Monterey. The report found that nitrate problems will likely worsen for several decades. For more than half a century, nitrate from fertilizer and animal waste have infiltrated into Tulare Lake Basin and Salinas Valley aquifers. Too much intake of nitrate through drinking water can harm human health. According to the report, infants who drink water containing nitrate in excess of the maximum contaminant level for drinking water may quickly become seriously ill, and if it's untreated, they may die because high nitrate levels can decrease the capacity of an infant's blood to carry oxygen. Now, chemicals are more likely to occur in poorer areas. In Tulare County, one of the poorest counties in the state Water Resources Control Board found that 75% of the wells tested contained at least one contaminant over the legal limit. But metropolitan areas also have cause for concern. Chromium 6, the chemical that caused the cancer cluster in the famous Aaron Brockovich story, has been found in the Bay Area and in 52 California counties at higher levels than the public health code deems healthy. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about our drinking water. Do you know what's in your water? Which chemicals should we be most concerned about? How are these chemicals regulated? Do filters work, and are they necessary? Today, we're joined by Andrea Ventura, Program Manager at Clean Water Action, where she works on drinking water contaminants and chemical policy. Clean Water Action is a 1 million member organization of people and groups joining together to protect our environment, health, and economic well-being. Andrea is on the Program Advisory Committee with the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, and she joins me here in studio. Hi, Andrea. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Horacio Amezquita. He works with farm workers in a Salinas housing co-op to fight contamination of nitrates in their wells. He works specifically with 64 families, and he joins us from Salinas. Hi, Horacio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for joining us. So, Andrea, let's start off with you. This show was sparked by a show we did about a month or so ago about water, and we got so many calls about basic questions. How can we take the chemicals out? Do we need filters? Mm-hmm. How concerned should we be? So, how concerned should we be about our drinking water in the state of California?
Well, I think you hit something on the head here. Is it somewhat depends on where you live. When you get into the question of do I want to drink tap water or should I be drinking bottled water, that sort of thing, for the most part, unless you know you have a very specific contaminant issue like some of the ones you just mentioned, tap water is the way to go. And the reason for that is that there are far more protections for tap water than there are for bottled water or vended water. About half of bottled water that's sold in markets today is in fact filtered tap water. The same is true of vended water machines. They're plugged into a tap system with maybe just a little extra filtration. Tap water is 10,000 times less expensive than bottled water. And then you also have some other side issues, things like bottled water that's generally in a plastic bottle. There are concerns about the materials in the plastic that can leach into water. Certainly, we're also concerned about just making plastic and the vast amounts of trash that comes with that. So on a whole, you know, we do regulate contamination in drinking water. The federal government regulates about 88 common contaminants found in drinking water. The state actually regulates 92 contaminants, so it does it a little bit better. And as new problems arise, we can create new regulations to protect the public. The problem comes up when there are specific contaminant issues based on whether it's an industrial use or an agricultural use, where chemicals are chemicals or other kinds of contaminants are leaching into drinking water. Sometimes there are natural causes for that. So we do have many communities that do have water that would not be safe to drink. On any given day, about 100,000 people are affected. And I think the problem is more that we have communities that don't necessarily have the infrastructure or the tax or ratepayer base to support safe drinking water systems that protect them. So it's more a matter of that sort of access than it is actually the contamination in the water itself.
So tap water is, you advocate drinking tap water. When we turn on our taps, what should we know about what's coming out of the faucet and the process involved in getting that water to our kitchens?
Well, what you should know is, first of all, where your water comes from. You want to know what the sources of your water are. We're very fortunate here in the Bay Area of having very high-quality drinking water sources, particularly if you live here in San Francisco, where you and I are sitting, with Hetch Hetchy water. Most of us drink water that's a combination of various sources. You also want to know what was found in your water. As I mentioned, we do regulate specific types of contaminants that we know could have health effects. And fortunately, if you are served by a public water system, and in Bay Area, you know, we certainly have large communities with public water systems, serving more than 10,000 people, then your water provider actually is required by both state and federal law to provide a report to you, to its customers, that will tell you what was found in the water in the previous year, how much of those contaminants were found in the water, whether they pose a problem, whether they are a violation of the law and a health threat, and what that health threat might be, and as well as information about sources of your water. So that information is available. Customers who pay a water bill directly automatically get that in the mail. It has to come by July of a given year. Sometimes people who don't pay the bill directly, maybe they pay it through their rent or a condo fee, they may not get it automatically, but they do have access to it either online or they can call their water provider and ask for that.
And I do want to give out the phone number early today, since we are doing this show to provide information about what is in our water, what should we be concerned about. We had a lot of questions last time around about filters, and we weren't able to get to all of them. So if you have any questions about your water, do you know where it comes from? Do you use a filter? Do you know how it works? Do you know how the regulating process works? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. So let's go to Salinas. And Horacio, where does your water come from in Salinas?
Right now it's coming from an aquifer that is about 2 miles away from the community. And this was built last year because three of the wells that were in our community were contaminated with high levels of nitrates and trichloropropane. So we only have about 8 months with the new well that was built by our public grants, because the people here in the community were not able to pay for a new well.
So you work with a housing co-op comprised of 64 families, and I understand that the groundwater was polluted and a number of people got sick. Can you tell us about what happened?
Yes. We had two wells here because we always have to have one in reserve. And in 1990, the first one got contaminated, and the second one got contaminated in 1993. So then they drew another one, and that was the third one. And in 2001, the third one was contaminated. So the people here were put in bottled water for like 5 years. But in between that period, they were still using the water for showering and cleaning ditches and washing clothes.
So they were drinking bottled water for 5 years?
Yes.
Who paid for that?
Well, the company was providing it, the company that was in charge of the system. But they were giving them 25 gallons per week. But then they decided that 25 gallons was too much water, so they cut it to 15 gallons so they can cut down their cost.
So each family was given 15 gallons?
Yes.
And what kind of sickness did these people experience?
They had mostly like rashes and red spots in their skin. Mm. Their hair was falling down, and they had their eyes were so irritated. So.
And did those problems go away once they started drinking the bottled water?
No, it was not the drinking part. It was just showering it with the water.
Uh-huh.
The drinking part is worse, you know. The problems that we saw between 2001 and 2006, it was just the outside problems, but we don't know what's the damage for the inside, like the liver and you know, your intestines. We don't know the damage of that. We only know the outside damages.
Right. So this is interesting. So they were drinking bottled water, but they were showering with the contaminated water, and I'm assuming probably brushing their teeth with it, possibly. This brings up a good point that we rarely talk about. Andrea, how concerned should we be about our shower water and the bathroom water when we're brushing our teeth?
It depends
on where you live.
It depends on what you're dealing with in the water. I mean, in a case like the situation where Horacio lives, the types of contaminants in the water did cause or are presumed to have caused these problems. What you see in more urban areas with showering, because we have public water systems that are fairly well regulated, you're dealing with largely contaminants that the main concern is drinking it. But however, things like chlorine that can dry out your skin or that you're breathing in, contaminants that do cause respiratory problems can be a problem. Again, we have the advantage of living in an area like the Bay Area where a lot of these things, I wouldn't say they're eradicated. We do have drinking water problems, but for the most part, we're not facing the same kinds of issues that communities like San Gerardo, where Horacio lives, are facing.
Is it fair to say that the majority of the communities that are facing these ish problems are poor communities?
These extreme problems tend largely to be low-income communities and communities of color because, again, it's a matter of not having the infrastructure and the ability to maintain those infrastructure to protect the water. That costs money. The other problem, too, is in our rural areas, we often have people living with private wells, you know, that they themselves own. And if you do, one thing you should know is that if you do own, and we do have communities here in the Bay Area that have private wells, we do have a contaminant plume in the South Bay of a contaminant called perchlorate that has affected hundreds of individual wells owned by private landowners. And in that case, the law doesn't protect you. That water is your responsibility. Testing it, knowing what's in it, and dealing with that is totally up to the landowner. So that's one thing people should know, is that there's a difference between a public water system and your own private well.
Right. And private wells are getting a lot more attention because of fracking.
Fracking certainly has the potential of impacting both private wells as well as public water systems.
And a lot of people are forced basically to use private wells because the public water system is contaminated because of the fracking. And this came out in the film Gasland. So a lot of these families felt like they had to bring in their own wells.
Right. Well, and that's a really dicey decision because what effect does the fracking have on your local well? If it's affecting your public well, And then you have a whole bunch of headaches with just determining whether the water that you're going to be accessing is safe.
That is Andrea Ventura. She's program manager at Clean Water Action, where she works on drinking water contaminants and chemical policy. We're also joined by Horacio Amezquita. He works with farm workers in a Salinas Valley housing co-op to fight contamination of nitrates in their wells. And we have a number of callers on the line, so let's hear from Denise in San Jose. Hi, Denise. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for hosting this. I lived in the Hetch Hetchy water system for 26 years. I lived in Menlo Park. And in 2004, when they introduced the new water disinfectant, new to us, chloramine, I developed terrible skin rashes, terrible itchy eyes, life-threatening asthma reactions every time I showered, and terrible inflammation in my digestive tract if I ate food or drank water prepared with anything that had chloramine in it. So any chloraminated tap water used in food preparation or beverages would cause bloating and terrible problems with my digestive tract. And my story went into the paper in June of 2004 because a doctor documented my case as he was looking at the respiratory issue as chloramine-mediated respiratory toxicity. Out of that, we formed a group to fight chloramine because no studies had been done on the skin, respiratory, or digestive effects of chloraminated water on human health. No epidemiological studies either. That's population studies where they figure out what the incidence of symptomology and health effects are going on in the public who are exposed to certain chemicals in the water. Chloramine is a chemical of chlorine plus ammonia. Previously, Hetch Hetchy used only chlorine. I never had a problem. I've lived all over the country, never had a problem, but I don't think I was exposed to chloraminated water until 2004. And so this was a major health problem for me. And when my story went in the paper, hundreds of people in the Bay Area called me with similar symptoms, and they went to medical clinics all over the Bay Area. You couldn't get an appointment in dermatology or these other departments, allergy, because so many people were experiencing these symptoms and didn't know it was the water disinfectant. They heard about our group. They eliminated all contact with chloraminated water, and that includes for bathing, showering, cooking your food. The bathing and showering thing is extremely difficult because how do you go to work, take care of your families, and not shower?
Right. Yeah.
We were using bottled spring water for quick Navy showers. And actually, my husband and I traveled out of town once a week to Morgan Hill or Gilroy and showered there because it was such a hardship.
And let me ask you, Denise, where does the chloramine come from?
Chloramine is it's a water disinfectant. They use the chlorine as a primary disinfectant because it kills the microorganisms, disease-causing microorganisms you want to get rid of in the water very effectively. So they use that first, and then they add ammonia to combine with the chlorine to form chloramine, which provides residual disinfection. Now, the reason they switched to chloramine, started adding the ammonia to form it, then the residual travels down the pipeline. And so it's the disinfectant that is supposed to guard against contamination of the water supply from the water treatment plant to your home. It's a less effective disinfectant, so if there are breaches in your water system, like road work cuts into a pipe, and you get recontamination, sometimes that causes a problem with chloramine, and you've got to put a lot of chlorine in there to treat that problem. But that's another issue. It's just a less effective disinfectant, which is why they use the chlorine first.
Right.
So,
Andrea, you want to jump in?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a very interesting and important topic to bring up. The problem with disinfection is it's a double-edged sword. Okay. We obviously, when we first introduced chlorine into water, it was a major step forward in public health because water does have impurities in it. It's out there in the world. There are bacteria and other problems in it. The problem is that chlorine itself it is a highly reactive substance. It can create other compounds when it comes into contact with other materials in water. And it is also a carcinogen. So the trick has always been having enough chlorine in water to do the trick, to protect us from problems in the water, but not so much so that it causes these other problems. And one of the reasons water systems started to switch to chloramines was because you had less of these disinfection byproducts. And so they felt that they were resolving another problem that was in there. However, as you've just heard from this caller, there have been community members who have stepped forward and have reported serious health issues that they feel are related to the chloramine exposures. While we have a pretty good body of knowledge about chlorine, its effects, and the pros and cons of it, that data was not out there and still is not out there to the same degree on chloramines. And so that's been a big part of the problem. What we're hoping is that things like, you know, new and more refined ultraviolet light technology, you know, for treatment of water and other things like that can be brought into bear so that we can maybe limit the amount of chlorine we're using and kind of get a better balance around that issue.
And is chloramine still in our water?
Well, it depends on where you live.
Right,
As the caller said, you know, you have to ask your local community whether they're using chloramines versus chlorine. It is something that is specifically added to water as part of the purification or disinfection process.
And a lot of the WQRs, those are the water quality reports you were talking about, don't specifically mention their use of chloramine. And
that's right.
Very confusing to the consumer. We have hundreds and thousands of people trying to avoid this because of their health effects. And they go through a nightmare of trying to find where to live because they can't figure out from their water quality reports who does and doesn't provide chloraminated water.
That's true. I mean, if you actually look at the list of contaminants listed by both the state and the federal government as being regulated, chlorine is a regulated substance. It doesn't specify chloramines.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, Denise. Really great info there. Thank you. Let's go next to Bob in Salinas. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I'm a retired drinking water professional, and I concur with everything that your guest has said so far. Also, just kind of noting on chloramines, it's an issue for people on dialysis that often they're not aware of, but it becomes a problem. But my big frustration is unfunded mandates. I never thought I'd be one of those people decrying the evils of unfunded mandates until I got into the drinking water field years ago. Oftentimes, the EPA and the state, you know, come up with regulations around drinking water monitoring, especially, you know, for contaminants, but they don't provide cities and counties and districts and so forth with the funding. And a lot of times you have, like, you know, especially in smaller counties, just one person at the health department that might be in charge of all this, and the only way they have a means of ensuring that everything's taken care of is just through local permit fees. And, you know, if you're in a recession or if your area is fee-adverse to things like taxation, permit fees, and whatnot, then the programs tend not to be very successful. So that's not often revealed. So that's just kind of my comment. You know, whatever you know, insight you have into that, I'm sure a lot of other people would find useful.
Okay, well, thank you, Bob. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll get an answer right after the break. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Do you know what's in your drinking water? Do you know how to read those reports? We'll talk about how to get the report and then how to make sense of it also after the break. You can leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco, and we've been broadcasting at 91.7 on the FM dial for, well, 71 years. And now with online listening, KALW has listeners worldwide. But just because you live in the Bay Area doesn't mean that KALW's online streams aren't for you. If you hear KALW at work but not at home, or if you lose reception on your commute, check out the online listening options at kalw.org. And thank you for listening to and supporting your local public radio station, KALW San Francisco.
is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there, maybe share a show with a friend, and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about the effect the death penalty has had on the state of California. This month marks the 20th anniversary of the resumption of executions in California. Since then, 13 people have been executed, costing an average of $308 million. That's $308 million. So will California become the sixth state in the country to repeal the death penalty? And what explains the nationwide shift against the death penalty? That's tomorrow. Friday, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing media coverage of the jobs bill and labor rights, or the lack of labor rights, in Bangladesh. We'll be talking about people who make clothing for American multinationals. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about our drinking water. Do you know what's in your drinking water? Have you ever received one of the reports? Have you been able to make sense of it? What concerns you? Do you have a filter? Do you have any questions about it? Do you know how it works? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. We've got full lines. We'll have one open in just a couple minutes. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Horacio Amezquita. He works with farm workers and a Salinas housing co-op. 64 families have fought contamination of nitrates in their wells. They had to spend 5 years drinking bottled water, and then they got grants to build a new well, and their water expenses greatly went up after that, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. We're also joined by Andrea Ventura, program manager at Clean Water Action, where she works on drinking water contaminants and chemical policy. She's also program advisory committee with the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water. And I do want to mention that we did invite the California Department of Public Health to come on, but they couldn't make it. So, Andrea, what are your thoughts on Bob's question? He says that the federal government passes all of these safe drinking water laws, but they don't provide the funding for them.
Yeah, both the federal and the government and the state have the authority to pass drinking water regulations. The one rule is that the states cannot be weaker than the federal government. And this is a problem in that sometimes providing safe clean water is expensive. It's usually a matter of maintaining treatment systems. And one of the things that sometimes frustrates or scares drinking water providers and even regulators are the fact that as we find drinking water problems in the state, either because we become aware of new contaminants that have health impacts, or because we find out that, in fact, there is a contaminant in our water we didn't know we had before, as we look at making those regulations as stringent and as health protective as possible, one of the problems is that that comes with a cost. And of course, you know, the water provider is on the front lines of customers who may not understand that, complaining about the cost of water. We all in some way or another pay for our water. What I will say is that when you live in an area like the Bay Area, our water is far less expensive comparative to areas like some of our rural communities that have severe pollution problems and have less people paying into that system. So that is a problem, and that is a dilemma for water providers to find that balance between cost effectiveness and safety. But I would say, too, that when you're looking at the cost, you also have to consider what are the costs to society, what are the healthcare costs, what are the external costs that are very hard to, add into the equation.
Right. And we need to look to the Salinas Housing Co-op for that information. And Horacio, what happened when you got the grants to build a new well for this area? What happened to water expenses?
Well, before when we have our own wells in our own site, the monthly bill was between $25 and $30 per month. But once we didn't have no more good water in our property, then when the water was coming from 2 miles away, the bill jumped between 100 and 150 per month.
Wow.
And that's very hard for people that just depend on Social Security, because even the state cuts some of their income from their Social Security. So they end up spending between 12 and 16% of their income on water.
And so today, the bills are still between 100 and 150 a month?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's so high.
Yeah.
How common is this, Andrea?
It's not uncommon, unfortunately. We have vast numbers of communities in the Central Valley, in the Imperial Valley, along the Central Coast. We do have some both natural and contaminant problems in water, things like arsenic, which is a major problem in groundwater in certain parts of the state, as well as things like nitrates or other hexavalent chromium or chromium-6, as you mentioned before, that come from human use and are contaminating our water. And when these communities, you know, are barely even on the map, let alone have the populations and the incomes to support these systems, it becomes a common problem.
And why is it so high?
Why is it so high? Because building the infrastructure to treat water and maintaining those systems are expensive. This is a long-term investment. The problem doesn't go away. That's why a lot of what we work on as an organization is not only cleaning up our polluted waters, but also trying to stop the source of contamination. That's why I work on things like chemical policy or working with agriculture to limit the amount of nitrates they're using.
And again, in this case, is this, I forgot if this is publicly provided or is it privately provided, the water in Salinas at this specific housing co-op? Horacio?
This is run by the county of Monterey right now, because our system was put in the court system in the federal courts, because the company that was running the system was falsifying lab tests. So that was one of the huge issues here in the community.
So this is a county system, and you're still paying between 100 and 150 a month for water.
Yes, and I think it's, you can make this problem less problematic if you can join other systems, but so far nobody has done it.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Bob, and we've got full line, so let's go through a few callers and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Curtis in Monterey. Hi, Curtis.
Hi,
go ahead, you're on the air.
Great. I just wanted to compliment you on your program. I listen often and many times want to call in, but today you struck on something that just really resonated with me, and I have some experience with it, and I just wanted to share it with you.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I was a federal employee and worked in an aviation unit out at Fort Ord. And as you know, Fort Ord's a Superfund site, and I believe that I was responsible in large part as a federal whistleblower. We used to defuel aircraft and dump helicopter jet fuel down storm drains to drain directly into the bay. And during the course of my training at a community college, I was training to be an EMT. And I had material safety data, material safety, hazardous materials handling training as part of that, because California was beginning to require that. And what I noticed at my job was that the federal job I had was out of sync with the state legislative regulations on safe drinking water. And I brought this to the attention of my supervisors, and nobody on the base wanted to hear it. I was federal civil service. They were Army. They didn't care. And so the result, the upshot of the whole thing is that I started reporting to the local Walter Wong, who was our Monterey County health officer at the time, and elevated it up through my management cycle, went to management, and I said, look, I know I'm breaking the law here, can I be fired if I refuse to do these things I'm being told to do every day on my job? And they said, yes, you can.
Wow.
What recourse do I have? They said, go to your union. Went to my union, And they said, well, we don't know anything about any of this health and safety stuff, but since you know so much about it, why don't you become the health and safety officer? So I did, and I started a long process of educating everybody out there. But here's the thing I wanted to point out that coincides with your caller from or your guest from Salinas, and that is because the base became got listed as a Superfund site, and it was primarily because of contaminated water, groundwater from all the industrial operations that were going on 40 square miles of Fort Ord, right on the coast here. They had jet fuel, they had solvents, we had carbon tetrachloride, we had methylene chloride. But the biggest and most offensive thing was an unlined toxic landfill in which the military dumped anything they wanted to, including explosives and industrial waste, and it was unlined. And we tried to get them to line that thing, and they would not do it. And the point I'm trying to make is that the state Department of Toxic Substance Control was trying to work with us, but at the same time they were working against us. They formed a community review board in which I was the chairperson for a while, and the U.S. EPA, we brought it to the attention of the U.S. EPA. We had the right to review water cleanup documents, and in the process we found out through a third party that one of the reporting testing agencies that tested four military bases, and this was during BRAC base closure going on, that the testing company had fraudulently reported the results, and they were disbarred by the federal government for contracting. And we brought this as a community review board to the attention of both the Army, the U.S. EPA, the state of California, and the local health authorities in Monterey County, and not a single one of them would touch it.
Yeah.
Not a single one of them would touch it. And we got our organization, I wrote the grant and applied for a technical assistance grant, a TAG grant, which is given to communities affected by Superfund sites. And it turned out that Fort Ord was one of the most complex Superfund sites and still is to this day. And because of the multiple contaminants, one, and two, because of the size of the area, there's toxic plumes under the water. The Army has done pump and treat systems, and they've tried all kinds of things. But the major offensive thing that's never going to go away is a 6-square-mile, 6-cell toxic landfill that's unlined. They said they put a cap on it. We have evidence that the cap is torn. I took pictures of it during the first year that it was in place because the mudslides, they had the slope wrong. The gradients were wrong. And when the soil slid, it tore the cap. And then they had a gas problem underneath. As this stuff deteriorated, it built up methane gas, and they had to vent it. And all of this is going on less than 300 feet from student housing, which is the old military housing on Fort Ord. So, you know, there's a lot. You could do probably multiple shows on this program, but the fact is we sued and we won in Ninth Circuit Court, in the San Jose Federal Courts. And the judge saw what we presented and talked to the Army and the regulatory agencies and said, unless you can respond to this community's concerns, we're going to fine for the plaintiff. And they waltzed us around in a circle and did everything they could to get us to cut a deal to drop our suit, and we refused to put our ground. And so we got a win, but the thing is, this is an exhausting process. It took 15 years of my life. They went after my federal retirement. Now, I am afraid to go to a public meeting to speak up, but this thing is still in progress. There's a review right now on the carbon tetrachloride plume that's in the city of Marina, which is the former Fort Ord. So, you know, good luck, folks.
You've
really got to lean on your legislative people and, you know, you have to put teeth in your argument. You have to be willing to start a fund to sue, because until you drag them into court, they're not going to do really a whole lot. So that's my personal experience. I hope yours is better.
I would just like to add something to that. Another problem that we do face with our drinking water, and first of all, I applaud the caller, obviously someone who is very courageous and took on a very difficult problem, and Fort Ord continues to be a major drinking water problem site in the state. One of the sad things about this is Clean Water Action, you know, has a number of basic values, and one is that everyone has the right and access to access safe water. We all need it, and no matter who you are, you have that right. The other is polluter responsibility, polluter pay, and holding them accountable. And one of the sad things is that how we regulate water is actually a pretty good system. We first have, and this is both federal and state, we have a scientific review to figure out, there's a contaminant we have a concern about. It's out there in our water. How dangerous it is, what does it do, and what would be the safe level in drinking water that we wouldn't expect people to get sick. That's the first step, and that's done by the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment in California, which is part of Cal EPA. That's science-based. It has nothing to do with anything else. Then what happens is the Department of Public Health takes that information, that safety information, and looks at technical feasibility to get it down to that level, because sometimes that's not feasible, and also, frankly, looks at cost. And that's when they set an enforceable drinking water standard. And it's supposed to be as close to that safe level as possible. Oftentimes it is the same level. Sometimes it's a little higher because of those cost and technical issues. Now, the problem with that, that's not a bad system. The problem that we have seen, two very good examples are trying to regulate in California perchlorate and chromium-6, the Erin Brockovich, quote-unquote, contaminant. These are not regulated by the federal government. And what we've seen is that as that process is supposed to happen, it's been bogged down by polluters and responsible parties who know that at the end of the day, they're going to end up being held accountable for that. There is going to be a cost associated with that. And so we see things like, well, we think the science that you've done on the state level is inadequate, and it needs to be peer reviewed, and that's all they have to say, and it has to go through a new process. And what we see is that this becomes a politicized process. It slows it down. An example: hexavalent chromium, which we have found in San Jose water, for instance. 52 counties out of 58 have had at least one detection. We were supposed to, by law in California, have a drinking water standard in 2004. We do not have a standard as of today. And what we're being told by the Department of Public Health is that it may take another 4 years to do the analyses needed, because up until this point, this has been a bogged down system.
And what do you mean by bogged down?
Well,
it seems like this would be a no-brainer to have a drinking water standard.
Well, except that it was questioned whether after the Erin Brockovich case and the movie, which came out in 2000, brought that to public attention. There was a big debate with a lot of folks saying that drinking chromium 6, it's only one type of chromium, but it is a very toxic form of chromium. Other types of chromium are actually nutrients. And it was claimed that, in fact, you didn't get sick from drinking it. You got sick only from breathing it in. That has been proven false. There has been scientific analysis since then. That was being done by Cal EPA. And again, that was questioned. They were brought to court. And these were really all ploys by responsible parties, corporate interests, who really didn't want to see this drinking water standard move forward.
So you've got the corporations, the U.S. government, and the military, it sounds like you have to, in some cases, go up against. I mean, Curtis's story was incredible, 15 years of his life. And Curtis, I hope you're still listening, because you have to see an amazing documentary called Semper Fi. Mm-hmm. And it's about a fight to expose water contamination on a marine base at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina.
Right.
We're talking male breast cancer, very high levels, deaths, and a massive cover-up. And I'm actually hoping that we can do a show about this, because this was such an incredible, infuriating, and amazing documentary. So thank you so much for that story. That was incredible. And gosh, we're almost out of time. So let's try to go through as many calls as we can and get as many questions as we can answered. Let's hear from Arnold in Santa Cruz. Hi, Arnold.
Yes, hello. I had a question regarding using an alternative way of getting rain water, is collecting rainwater from roofs and storing it in tanks and using that as an alternative. And the water shouldn't have any contaminants in it, like nitrates or chlorine or chloramines or chromium or anything. And it seems like for like that woman that called that had the issue with chloramines, this could be a way of getting around that.
All right. Well, thank you. What do you think, Andrea, collecting rainwater off your roof?
There is actually a movement, in particular in cities like San Francisco, that are trying to be really creative about using what we call gray water, which would include collecting rainwater in your community or using dish soap water and things like that, not for so much for drinking, but for other uses in the home. For instance, flushing your toilets, you know, we certainly, or watering your plants and your landscaping needs. I think it is probably not true. I'm not an expert on air deposition and water coming off of roofs, but I would be a little concerned about assuming that that is not contaminated. First of all, rain does come through the air. There is air pollution out there. You know, we have things like acid rain. Also, what's coming off your roof is made of toxic material. So I would be a little uncomfortable assuming that that is pure unadulterated drinking water, but there are other uses for that water, and there is a lot of thought being given to that as a way of conserving our water resources.
All right. Well, thank you for the question. And we've got a couple other questions about house plumbing and filters. Charlie says, what's a good way to test the water that picks up from your old house plumbing? And another related question, I'm sure my water is safe to drink, but here in Aptos, my water smells and tastes bad, so I have to filter it. How do I know the water from my tap is as safe as the water that's being tested?
Well, that's a very good question. And at the end of the day, if you're worried about what's actually going on within your house, that is up to you to have tested. There are private laboratories that can do that kind of testing if you really feel that you have a problem, and that can be range anything from $15 to thousands of dollars, depending on what the problem is and the labs. So that would be up to the homeowner to deal with. What I can tell you about filters, filters are only as good as what they were intended to filter out. Okay, so just slapping a filter on your sink, or slapping it one under your sink, or putting it onto your home isn't necessarily going to do what you want it to do, unless it's made to address the problem you're concerned with. One of the things we tell people is the first thing you should do is find out if you really need a filter. So get that water quality report I talked about earlier, and see what the problem is.
And just to be clear again, the water quality report goes up to your building.
Up to the house, right.
And so if you live in an old building,
that's not going to deal
with rusty pipes or leaks,
right,
or leaching.
That's not going to deal with that.
Okay. You might want to do an independent test yourself.
You might want to do an independent test, because the thing is that when somebody is, insisting that they need to filter their water because of an outside source, we always remind them that they should be ensuring that the filter is certified by the state of California.
Right.
Unfortunately, the state does not certify filters that deal with aesthetic problems like taste, odor, even the degree of chlorine smell you may be getting. If you are specifically concerned about something like lead, because you may have old lead pipes, that's another story. Then you could look for a filter that would deal with lead. But you'd have to know that that's a problem, and that would be up to the homeowner to find out.
This is time-consuming. I spent 2 weeks researching
yeah,
all of this
you
for
said
my
that,
filter.
Yeah.
And then to get the test, it does take some time. Another question, how do I know who my water provider is if I don't pay my own water bill?
Well, there's a couple of ways of finding that out. Obviously, if you're not paying it through because you're paying rent,
right,
or you're maybe a condo association, then you should ask your landlord for that information. Sometimes, too, you can even ask the landlord to provide you with the report. But that would be the first place to go. If you don't get satisfaction there, then, I would do an internet search on water providers in your community and call them.
We couldn't get Chris on the line, but he said he and his wife are having some serious health problems. They're wondering if it's the water.
I would know that.
Do an independent test and then do some research on this.
You also should, you know, depending on what your health problems are, to see if that would be likely due to a water contaminant.
And in our remaining minute, what is the best way to really use our power around this issue? You've got at the very, the fundamental level, are my pipes rusty? And then the larger issue, we heard earlier about Curtis, the history of cleaning up Fort Ord, he's putting his job on the line.
Right, and the fact that our drinking water standards, when we do create them, are being slowed down by these outside, and something that the public doesn't know. I think that the first order of business for every consumer is to know about their water. So get the report if it is a if you're on a public water system. Be as educated as possible. The next step is, you know, participate in water decision making in your community. Water providers have public meetings. Water districts that are the stewards of our water systems have public meetings. Make your voice heard. In a community like Horacio, you're right, talking about 64 families, and they made their voices heard, and they're still struggling with this problem, but that is an important way of getting toward a solution.
And Horacio, based on what you've learned through this experience, what would you add to that? What would you add to that based on using your power and your voice on this issue?
Everyone that is in the community, they need to be concerned that water is very important, and they have to get involved. And also all the public, because we have very little amounts of water. It looks like we have a lot, but we're not. Right. Mm. And our body is made up about 65% to 70% of water.
Right.
So we need to consume clean water and make sure that we protect the water.
All right.
Pollution.
Thank you so much. And we didn't even get to the privatization of water, but that's for
right.
another show.
Another conversation.
Horacio as Mezquita, he works with farm workers and a Salinas housing co-op to fight contamination. And Andrea Ventura is program manager at Clean Water Action. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And thanks for your calls and emails. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. Check yourcallradio.org for more information. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What effect has the death penalty had on the state of California? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the history of the death penalty and the moratorium initiative on November's ballot. April 2012 marks the 20th anniversary of the resumption of executions in California. Since then, 13 people have been executed, costing an average of $308 million each. Will California become the sixth state in the country to repeal the death penalty? And what explains the nationwide shift against it? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.